Good evening and welcome to another episode of Citizen Kane. It is the 22nd of January 2017 and we are streaming live on good old YouTube right now. We do stream live every Sunday night between 7 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can always find the links to those live stream videos on our webpage, citizenkane.org, as well as the Facebook page. If you are watching the live stream edition as opposed to maybe watching it later in the week on Cheshire TV and you would like to get a hold of us, add your opinion to the round table here, feel free, call that number 267-521-2771. You can Skype us. Citizen Kane is the handle. And of course, you can always get a hold of me during the week, anytime. That email address is show@citizenkane.org. My name is Conan Soliday, and I am joined, as usual, by the lovely Shauna Nash. Shauna, how are you this evening? Did you dress accordingly?
Yeah.
Appropriately?
I did.
It is getting warmer.
No, it's not. It's freezing.
No, I think we're getting used to it. We talked about this last week. I think we're getting used to it.
Not right now. I'm waiting for this to be over with.
Well, I think
for more than one reason.
I do think we're kind of getting to the end of this this nonsense.
You're gonna jinx it, man.
Life as you know it on Earth ends.
No, it doesn't. Springtime is on its way. So, and there goes my screen. I'm gonna have to fix that. That's a problem. I have to apologize right off the top here. If you have been watching and following the show, you know that I was working on some Warren articles
for
the school budget. And I just got carried away. I was almost close to 20 signatures. And then I was thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute. Do I actually know when the deadline for this is? Because this would be the fifth
Third?
Year. Fourth? Yep, yeah, definitely. This would be the fifth year. Fourth year. Fourth
Whatever.
Year.
Advertising.
And, you know, I've been doing it and you know, I think it was a combination of me. First of all, I was reading the wrong state statute.
You're reading a lot of state statutes.
Well, there are three different areas where it talks about Warren articles. There's a school section, there is a town hall, town meeting system section, and then there is the SB2 official ballot section. And I was plain and simple, I was reading the wrong one.
Okay, so you're holding everybody in suspense. What did you learn? What happened with your budget article, your warrants?
Oh, I learned that last week was the deadline. It actually was earlier than last week. It was the 10th of January. So my warrants won't be going on the ballot this year. There'll be no warrants talked about. Well, there'll be school warrants talked about at the February 11th deliberative session, but they won't be talking about mines. And so I'm kind of
there won't be any brought in
by outside forces
from regular citizens.
Correct, from Citizen Kane. So I do apologize for even talking about it and getting some people. I know some people were interested in being able to vote on those, even if they were going to be amended. But hey, you know what? They'll be next year. I'm not going anywhere.
And
neither will the school board. And the budget's going up.
Millions and millions of dollars to produce stupid children.
Yeah. Well, they don't think so. They're trying to fix that by not.
That's the point.
By not having the stupid children. So we did go to a meeting on middle of last week, the 17th, and the school went through the motions, talked about how much the budget's going up, talked about the default budget, talked about what was actually increasing and what they cut. And they actually did cut some things. But, you know, because of, well, I mean, the biggest thing that's hurting pretty much everyone across the country is the increase in medical insurance and the increase in government salaries. They're going up every year, and of course...
Well, they have the same issue as government employees. They're still employees of something, and a lot of the increases to their wages were offset by their rates. Their insurance rates are going up, which that's... wonderful that their rates are factored into their increases and all that.
Yeah, they're getting cost of living adjustments every year, whereas everyone else, you know, sorry, chumo. The only way you're going to get an increase is if you get a raise in your salary because were actually productive at your job and you
well,
did a good
job. That's not always a factor in your stupid job.
Well, sometimes jobs just have time and service adjustments. So yes, and that should be a part of, and so do the teachers, by the way. They get raises just for being there, but the increases that they're getting are cost of living adjustments, which I don't even think Social Security got a cost of adjustment living or
cost of living adjustment. No, they didn't.
Thank you, ma'am. So I did find out that they do have a few more students this year. I think they went from 3,385. Now they're up to 3,417. So that actually brought that number, the 20 grand per kid.
That went up?
No, it went down because there's more kids. So they got more state funding, which kind of alleviated the per tuition spending. So now
per
I think it's
spending.
So right now so they're spending 19,000. This new budget with the new population will be $19,359 per student, which is still outrageous.
And that lowering isn't because they've found a way to do more with less or their budget has actually gone down. It's kind of just the fact that they have more kids.
Correct. This is why they if you listen to some of the board members talking, they really want to bring in outside kids, as well as there's I know that past chairman Chris Coates really wants to merge Monadnock, who are having their own problems, by the way,
mm-hmm.
With Keene, get them all in one building, and that will
under one district under one. Cost center code.
Right, and that would alleviate the burden. Of course, it wouldn't last.
Why would it not last?
Well, because it's government, and they only spend...
It seems to me like government's lasted a pretty long time, though. So, I mean, if it's not physically... You know, it depends on what they would do. Would they shut down the other schools? Like Monadnock High, would they
just like Jonathan Daniels, which by the way didn't shut down.
No,
it just got repurposed, and we're still spending money on it.
Is that what he's actually talking about? Because if he's saying let's just consolidate it, you know, the paperwork, the kids are still going to the same place, or maybe you know shut down one building that isn't used as much, then
it would actually the merge would actually involve shipping closing buildings,
shipping product from one old distribution center to the larger distribution center.
Right. The difference is, and I know some people have compared this to, because businesses do this all the time. Businesses fluctuate, they grow and they decrease, and they get together and have a board meeting, say, hey, look, we're not selling as much as we were. We have less customers, this and that. We've got to cut back, and push it all in instead of three buildings, push it in two buildings. The difference is that those are businesses and they're usually private, and they can fail, and they have to make those decisions or they'll fail.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of this school system, raising the budget by $1 million every year is something they can get away with because they're going to get the money regardless. So no, I heard that comparison on the radio last week, and no, I'm sorry. If you school district, Monadnock school district, Keene school district, all the way across the country, if you actually operated like a company, you would have gone out of business back in the 70s because you were not giving the people a good product and you're ripping them off. It's too expensive. You're not shipping out, the quality of kids that you should be for that amount of money. Sorry, you failed.
If they were in actual business, and most businesses, especially the big businesses that I've read about, experienced, worked under at the very low, you know, S shoveling segment of the job,
mm-hmm.
They're not really on we need to make a profit, we need to stay above water. They're in the grow or die model.
Yeah, and
you can't just simply, like a McDonald's store that I've, you know, worked at in California, it couldn't just be in the black year over year. It had to be earning more than last year. Or like when I worked with Walmart, they had to be doing better than last year. Better, better, better. And that kind of has a... There's only so much pie in the entire country.
Yep.
We all have only so much money to spend on detergent, on Happy Meals and all that. So I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, because I didn't hear that part before of, oh, you know, if they had to run like a business and all that. I imagine if the school districts were ran like a business in this country, on this planet, under the grow or die business model, abortion would be totally outlawed. Because where would the product come from? It'd come from people having babies. What contributes to not as many babies being around? Abortion being accessible.
Well, I'm immediately thinking.
Careful
of
what
it.
Y'all wish for, man.
I don't know about that. I don't know if it would. If in this,
I don't know either. I mean, just thinking, like, where would they get more? They would be driven to have more share, and they can only go so far into, you know, pre-K being required.
Yeah, I want.
Unless they had like pre-college.
I don't know if that comparison works.
Just a prediction based on, you know.
I want them to run like a business, more like a business, but I don't think that grow or die philosophy would be.
I think it would actually get in there anyways.
I don't know.
Because it's a, you know, ridiculous industrial society consequence, I guess.
Well, we did go to the meeting, and right off the bat, so I brought last year's numbers so I can compare this year. And the first thing I noticed right off the bat was looking at the default budgets of the 2 years. In fact, let me just go ahead and play this for you.
I'm looking at this? I'm comparing the default budgets this year to last year. I noticed that the negotiated labor contracts almost tripled from 506,000 to 1.4 million. Could someone speak on exactly what happened there?
Okay, so let me bring that up. So, yeah, to repeat those numbers, and actually I don't even have last year's negotiated labor costs. But anyways, this year, if you're watching the screen here...
it is triple of what it was last
it's,
year.
Well, it, not exact, almost tripled. So 1.4 million in negotiated labor contracts, which is pretty much... the entirety of this year's budget increase. It's a lot of money. Dude is going to get up here and explain what exactly happened.
I think that the difference is a large increase in health insurance and to a smaller degree an increase in requirement that we pay more into New Hampshire retirement as the employer, the district pays more. Health insurance is projected to be up 15.5% next year, and I think that would be the major difference. Also, if you note, last year I think you had three negotiated agreements on the budget. Those, you might note, many of you, that they're level funded in the budget, pending voter approval. There was a larger number of those last year, which weren't included in the base budget.
Okay,
I lost that.
So it was basically retirement, healthcare is gone up. But
insurance
has gone up, but I mean, you know, the teachers should be, they're paying more too, the teachers themselves, and they should be paying more. It's, you know, their insurance. Not all employers, which we are the employers, pay as much insurance as we are. I think it's quite high.
Of what?
Like more than 80%?
Yeah, that's more than what my last job did. I don't know what my current job does. I don't even bother with it. I just don't even get insurance.
Those contracts, salary increase contracts from last year that Keene voted in the affirmative for, there was three of them. They were the office personnel group, the custodians, and the psychologists. That increase that we're going to be feeling this year on the budget is $81,771, which is only 6% of that 1.4 million increase. So most of it was in fact retirement and health insurance.
Well, the rates are going up.
And well, yeah, and it's, you know, it's definitely a bubble that it's going to have to pop soon because it's unsustainable. Just week in Keene, just this week, actually, it was yesterday, right? They had the protesters who by the way, weren't kicking over trash cans or lighting cars on fire or throwing debris through windows. I'm not sure what they were.
I also don't think there are any Trump supporters there to agitate them. From what I know, I walked by and I did not.
Well, wait a minute, because they weren't there to protest Trump. Well, no, they weren't. No. They were there about that. And this is where I was going. Okay. They're there to protest the removal of the Affordable Care Act, which is part of the problem, and why the insurance is going through the roof like it is.
Because everybody's in the pool. Everybody's in the insurance pool. So your rates have to cover everybody. Your rates aren't just how much does it cost to insure you.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a guarantee risk. Like if you're healthy and you're not going to file as many claims, your rate doesn't reflect you. It reflects you and everybody else in the area with the same attributes as you. That is a guaranteed health risk claim risk.
And as you pointed out, regardless if you are a healthy young individual who, you know, exercises regularly and keeps healthy, you're still paying the same as the fat smoker who, you know, is killing himself.
Well, I don't know. Most people don't understand insurance. I mean, health insurance is kind of the same area as car insurance. It's not the car. You're not paying for your health care. You're paying for the insurance on it,
mm-hmm.
which usually is kind of a joke. So,
well, let me switch back over here to the... So that was the default budget that was going up by the 1.4 million... just in salaries. This is the actual budget, and you can see they actually did make cuts. The whopper on there is the increase in contractual salaries and benefits went up 800,000. They cut some technology.
Are there any like warrant articles that are on here, or is this just the budget itself? Because even if I'm there watching it and listening to them go through it like you are, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Okay, I'm just showing them that they made cuts,
and yet it's still
going up $1 million.
You know, I mean, I know last week I was getting on you that there is point somewhere where it's possible to reach out to people and be like, "Hey, I agree with you about this." That's not what I said.
Well, I'll tell you what you do.
It's been 20 minutes.
Okay, so we're moving right along. So you should have just said that. Move right along. There are other articles. There are 11 articles, and most of them have to do with... So they get the first one, which is the budget increase. Then you have one collective bargaining increase. This is a new union. Great. The paraprofessionals.
So next year, that increase of negotiated contracts is going to look like it went up again, like quadrupled or something, because there's another segment.
Mm-hmm. So paraprofessionals are asking for, now that they're a new union, they're going to ask for their increases for the next 4 years. And I'm sure the people will feel sorry for them and vote in the affirmative. Of course, most of the people who will be voting, at least half of the 50% of the people who will be voting will be, in fact, school employees or are close with the school.
Mm, so would I.
Yeah, that's just the nature of the part of the problem. You know, of course these people are going to vote for raises for themselves. So that's Article 2. Article 3, nope, skip that one. That just means that it'll go back. The other bunch of them have to do with the school district creating an AREA committee to entice some outside residents, some outside communities to enter into an agreement to send their kids to Keene Right now, they're paying a penalty for not being a part of this. It's a 20-year agreement. I didn't ask what the penalty is for getting out of it before 20 years, but they're paying a penalty because so it's for insurance, you know.
Well, okay.
If they enter into the agreement,
there's a long-term agreement and then there's a short-term agreement, and the short-term agreement is more expensive than the long-term agreement because, you know, nobody wants to deal with stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't enter into a long-term agreement. 20 years is a long time. So, a lot of things can happen in 20 years.
Well, that's like a whole generation of people who don't want to raise their children at home because they don't like them. So then there's Article 9. This is the usual $50,000 to be a school building maintenance fund. Oh, what if the roof collapses? What are you going to do? Vote for this or you want the roof to fall on children?
And by the way, that amount, I asked about how big that was,
what the grant, how much is in the school maintenance fund itself right now?
The pool is a little over $500,000.
And they said they'll consider it full when it's at $1 million.
Well, no, they won't unless someone tells them otherwise. Like, for example,
all I can tell you is what was actually said out loud. They said out loud that when it gets to $1 million, they're going to consider it full.
They were considering creating an amendment on that article to be full at $1 million. If that amendment's not there, they're going to do whatever. If they don't spend it before then. I don't know why they didn't spend it on one of these repair jobs in one of the elementary schools.
Maybe they wanted to be...
All right, what's Article 10?
Basically, same thing. $50,000 for special education. Unanticipated special ed costs. And the same question was preempted because some terrible, terrible man asked a question about the last article. So there, she explained this article, and then before she moved on, she said, I'm predicting the question, and there's $50,000 and $1 in it already. And I'm not sure exactly where this spending comes from or when they would need to spend it, but my impression only is that they're mandated by the government of some sort, state or federal, to take care of special ed children, and it's just on them.
Right. I don't see how that would be used unless they picked up someone who's living way off in the woods.
Or if they're in the woods equivalent of being needing special ed funds.
Right.
So I don't know. Article 11 sounds like an innovation in fund revenue generation. they want Alumni Field to be...
They want to revamp it,
They want repairs made to it. It costs a huge amount. Getting a person, consultant, or whatever to fundraise that big amount also costs a big amount. So this is a pre-amount where people can donate money to fund the guy who's going to fund the big amount.
So this is just a trust fund for donations.
It's a holding place for donations,
correct.
I think. I emailed the board member who spoke about it and have not gotten a response because it went to an SAU29.org email, so probably never going to be seen. The usual, can the district buy land? And thank you for coming. So, not all that unreasonable. That's it.
Well, if you are interested in amending that budget of $66.1 million, I'll be doing so at the February 11th deliberative session. It's on a Saturday morning. I haven't decided how much to try for. Maybe just to decrease it to last year's budget, which was 65.
So February 11th.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So not the next two upcoming Saturdays, but the Saturday after. Yep. So it's the Saturday after Super Bowl, I believe.
I don't know.
It's not the day before Super Bowl. So maybe, you know, people actually show up, but probably not because, you know, why bother?
Yeah,
not important.
Generally, about 100 people show up to this. And all the years that I've been going, it's always about 100 people. It's a very sad state of affairs where it seems like no one really cares what's going on, and the budget just keeps going up by about $1 million every year. And people complain, my taxes are going up. I don't even have kids in the system. My taxes are going up. And it's like, well, did you go to that meeting? Did you try to vote it down? And it's like, nope. I don't care.
Well,
I don't care to waste my time.
The paradox of, well, if you vote down this one, then the default goes up. And it's like, you can't really vote down the default. You can't do anything to the default, and you can't really do anything to the budget, honestly, because it's already set up. They already have these numbers. And if you do bring up, you know, how about you not spend this amount? Well, that's in a contract that's already settled, so you don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, and then you're left there thinking of like, well, what are they spending the money on that isn't useful? And you don't know because you're not a student there. You don't, there's no way to get, I believe, a big picture image of what the money is being spent on.
Well, according to their PowerPoint, here's the spending.
Right. Well, what's a transfer? Okay. No idea what that even is. And I'm not just saying like these should be easier, but you know, you see that and it's it looks like it's already set.
I think those are the 700 students who are coming from other towns, Chesterfield and West Berlin and whatnot. Discretionary is books and stuff.
And that's what he was saying at the meeting, that that's the only thing that they can really play around with.
I'm sorry, non-discretionary is books. What is discretionary?
It means they can choose, they have discretion on what it is.
Anyways, the whopper here is salaries and benefits. So 45.2 million of the 66 is teachers
and how does anybody show up to one of those meetings and say, you should be paid less? Because you don't, it's always a sense of you don't know. You don't know. You go to those meetings and it's difficult. It's intimidating.
It is intimidating.
I can even recognize when I'm being intimidated into being quiet and not saying anything.
Here's how you have to look at it.
And there's a lot of people who like don't even get that far and they just don't go.
Okay, here's how you have to look at it. Okay, now if you came to my job, which, you know, we are part of that live or die philosophy. If we don't sell to our customers, make our customers happy, we're going to go out of business. If you came to my workplace and went through during my annual checkup, and you were sitting in the corner there, and you said, "No, I don't think you should get a raise this year," now that would be a problem, because guess what? You may be a customer, but you're not my employer.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a customer of the school district, but I'm not their employer.
No. Oh, you better believe you are. In fact, I don't even know if you can. No, you are. In your case, you are not a customer. You are only the employer. Now, if you were a parent with your kid going through the system, you would be both customer and employer. So that's what you have to wrap your mind around. These are your employees. You can go to these meetings and say no. I'm sorry. Look at the landscape. Look at the climate. This is not something that is sustainable. This is not. No, you're not going to get a raise this year.
Then it seems to me, and what I've seen happen at budget meetings before, at the deliberative sessions, their response is, shut up. You don't know what's been going on. You don't know how hard we worked on this budget.
You never came to any of the meetings.
You need to go to those other meetings.
And
I've been saying that for so many years, to actually go to the meetings before the last meeting of the year that actually matters. Because honestly, the deliberative session does not matter.
Why should you go to a meeting of an institution that you don't even support? This is like going to...
Why should you try to deconverge an institution that's already converged and hates you?
Why
would you bother?
Because I'm their employer.
Except that you're not.
I'm their employer. But this is like going to a shopping center that you never shop at, and telling them how to do their business. I got a call last night from one of the Sentinel editors. Apparently, they have been working on an article that'll probably be airing on Monday.
Well, she just wanted to know how you were doing.
Dealing with the they've been looking into the whole transgender policy at Keene, and of course, I had a long conversation with one of, with the actual writer of the article. I got a call last night, and I won't mention her name, but she pretty much asked me, "All right, we've got this information, we've got you quoted here and all," and she's like, "Who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you?" I'm like, "Who are you of importance?" And why should we care? And why are we writing anything that you're saying? That's the gist that I was getting. And I picked this up last year at the January 17th meeting.
You know, you should probably have that question answered before you invest in an article. But okay.
This is not the writer of the article.
Okay.
Article was submitted to the editor. Now the editor's going through and he's like, "Well, who is this guy?"
Oh, okay. Well.
And I get this quite often. It's who are you? And do you even have any kids in the system?
It is unusual for somebody without kids in the system to pretend to have any idea of how the system should be.
Regardless, but no one seems to think that the fact that 52% of my property taxes are going to pay for this system. But they basically they're like, "You, we'll take your money. But you don't get to talk about how we run our affairs, how we run our business." By the way, I'm good with that.
What do you mean?
If they would give me my money back. Because I want them to run their system, their institution, their school, parents, teachers, and administrators. That's who should be a part of the system. Whenever you spread it out like this to the whole entire community, this is when it gets out of control like it is. This is why the spending goes up $1 million every year. Because if you don't, you lose your house. They'll take your house from you.
If you don't pay the taxes.
And you'll be blasted as a tax evader. And no one will have any love for you. Regardless, that tax is theft. Taxation is theft.
Eh, whatever.
Well, I told the woman who I was a concerned taxpayer. I said that my daughter went to the school for a couple of months. She decided she didn't want to have any part of it. It was really, on her part, it was really more of a moving into the community and getting to know some kids. And she did make a handful of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got out. So, yeah, I'm a concerned taxpayer.
She's not living under the, you know, stairs or something. She has a job. She's, you know, I mean, I've met her. She's not dumb.
Well, I wish these people who have thought about that.
You didn't just let your kid drop out of school because she got bored. That's what I'm trying to give you here.
No, she moved on. She was ready to move on.
Okay, she's 8. She's over age and all that. Okay.
Yeah, she's doing.
Not like
she's doing well for herself.
Like a 12-year-old, like, "I'm bored with school. I'm
she's
an adult."
She's doing well for herself. No, I wish people who that is. This is really a hard argument to have with people that believe that it's mandatory that you that it takes a village. To raise an idiot. It takes a village to get together and compile all the money and everything else runs, you know, most private affairs run smoothly and it doesn't take a village to make Walmart run or Target or Home Depot.
Actually, it does.
Well, they do get
a lot of Walmart would not be as big as it is if it were not the whole village
getting cuts.
Conned into it.
Oh, you mean workers? Yeah,
I'm talking about the whole village. Yeah, when I get the question, well, it's, I've never gotten the question, "Do you have any kids in the school?" Because it's always people who already know me who ask me this, and they just say, "You don't have any kids, so what do you care?" And
when you're talking about the budget being too big,
anything, I don't exist in the conversation because I don't matter because, you know, I don't have any kids in the school. And if it sounded like the way you were asked, it sounded more like curiosity than a looking for a way to disqualify you.
No, I think she was looking. I think she was looking to cut some of the article down. And it's like, well, who is this guy, and what does he? What does he matter?
Oh, well, then that's what I thought it was.
I was being vetted.
Usually.
I was being vetted for my importance,
then.
And I wasn't important. So we'll see if anything I said was going to be in this article. Even though I scooped.
Well,
it.
You'll probably have a whole. Well, you okay? There really wasn't. I got nothing.
So we talked about vouchers, school money following the kid, school vouchers. A couple of weeks back, I am more in favor of charter schools and voucher programs than I am of the current system. I don't believe that it'll actually fix the problem because these are just issues that will, as long as it's being funded by public monies, there is room for problems and room for them spending out of control.
Well,
just like the public schools. But I think it's a much, much better solution than the current solution. And liberals hate the voucher system. They hate it. They despise it.
Well, it does have an attachment of if people had a choice, they wouldn't go with what the system is right now. I wouldn't call it the solution. And yeah, there is a problem of, you know, you don't have any kids to ostensibly pay for their education. But the way that I see it, it's like, well, if the voucher, the money is following the kid to the school, then they are going to produce that utopia of a smarter, better workforce, better citizens, better human beings.
Well, right off the bat,
in that case, it's like, well, it's not exactly what I want, which would be more homeschooling, more, you know, kind of cooperative homeschooling and all that of the classics that I think are important, but it's a little closer towards that.
I think there'd be a private school can offer what you're looking for.
I'm not in the shopping for a private school right now.
The best thing about the voucher system is that you will have institutions cropping up who will be fighting for that money. Because they need it to survive. There you go. You get your business model again. So they will be trying to entice you and your kids to come to their institution to get that $3,500 or whatever the state is offering. The money will follow them. And of course, they'll have to pay for everything else. There might be monies that you'll have to pay. They might have to, I'm thinking like textbooks.
They might have to change the prices.
And they might not have feed the kids breakfast programs and whatnot. But I did have
audio on this.
Yeah, I was able to catch a progressive liberal type versus a more conservative type arguing over the voucher system. And I think it really, with the exception of the union, defending the union system, I think that State Representative Dan Eaton really describes the liberal argument.
Point, you know, point two was school vouchers. There again, I think there ought to be a discussion.
All right, hold on. Let me set this up. So this is Bill Beauregard, local, and he is in favor of the voucher system. He's also in favor of this.
What is he also in favor of?
Public education. Here's Bill. Gosh darn. Look at how it scoops up like that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay, here it is.
Quiet. I think there ought to be a discussion about those, and I'm confused as to why anyone who supports school vouchers is viewed as a leper or, you know, what have you. I think there ought to be a discussion. If I want to have my child go to another school, why shouldn't I be able to voucher that student to that school?
Because we have education. Public education has been a foundation of the democracy. So vouchers historically, traditionally have been used for religious schooling. We have a very clear constitution of separation of church and state.
That's not in the constitution.
If you want to send your kids to a parochial school, you have every right to do that. But you do not have the right to make the public pay for it. We have done a huge investment in charter schools, which give an alternative education. We have charter schools in the region here. So you have a school choice. If you want a religious foundation for your schooling, you have the right to do that. They provide, some of them provide scholarships, other of them require a tuition. And if you want to send your kids, you figure out the way to do that.
All right, and there's the big one. All right, so keep religion, keep those religious nuts out of school. We don't want, in fact, we don't even want your kids learning about any type of religion.
Except they are taught religion. I'm not going to go into the whole, oh, the state religion, the religion of the state existing and all that weird,
bizarre
stuff that isn't real.
They open every morning with a prayer to the flag.
That's not a prayer.
Most people
don't really pay attention to what they're doing anyways. Unless you do think that there is some connection between, physical movements and spiritual mental connection, mm-hmm. which would be neat. But there is the religion of whatever it is that you're that the kids are being taught. They are being not brainwashed, but brain primed to believe certain things. I have seen the meme on Facebook, I'm sorry, but so often of people complaining, they're in their 20s, they're in their 30s, they're in their, you know, 40s and 50s, complaining about how in school they weren't taught how to do their taxes. They weren't taught, you know, how to change a car tire. They weren't taught, you know, how to buy a car or something, but they know what the Pythagorean theorem is, and woo, that's so, you know, that's such a waste. And I always want to tell them, like, do you really want the government to be telling you how to do your taxes? Yeah, do you really want the government to be showing you how to buy a car? Do you really want the government? I mean, God, look at what sex ed is in school. It's horrifying. Horrifying.
Well, what he said was...
And I'm not even done, but the whole separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. It's a freaking meme from 240 years ago that is not, you know, when he wrote it, I don't think he was even president when Thomas Jefferson wrote it, in a letter to a pastor who was pretty much like, the whole religion is all going to get along and be separate from the government, was basically warring Protestant factions that were kind of pretty much similar to each other. It wasn't this vast difference of, you know, Muslim versus massively atheist who knows everything, you know, versus evangelical, roll your own in the wilderness event fundamentalist, mm-hmm. versus, you know, Antiochian Orthodox in Tennessee versus Catholic that, you know, versus anything related to Vatican II. So the idea of like, oh, the church and state is separate and, you know, freedom of religion or freedom from religion, advertising, whatever. It's all kind of a joke. It's all taken out of like a dead context that this is a completely different country. And the same thing with the conservatives who are, oh, I'm a constitutionalist. I believe in the Constitution. That's what I'm defending. You haven't defended anything. You haven't conserved anything.
Well, they're outnumbered these days.
They're outnumbered. Okay, yeah. And they weren't outnumbered at Second Manassas. Whatever, man. It's all just kind of a gag.
Well,
at this point,
there are plenty of people in this country, and I'm not supportive of sending public monies to any facility.
And I've looked up,
let alone a religious one.
And I was
regardless of the religion.
And I was looking up other religious schools last night. I don't remember why, but I was reading some, like, their mission statements. I couldn't tell them the difference between this, you know, super Catholic university and the university that I went to, which was a state, California State University. It wasn't a Cal State, it was a University of California, mm-hmm. as if there's a difference. But, you know, so, I mean, there isn't really much of a difference between a so-called religious school and what they're teaching and regular...
Being indoctrinated.
Being indoctrinated. I mean, it had, like, in their mission statement, oh, we present social justice in light of Catholicism. It's like, yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Okay, well, but I've always believed that argument. I've heard that argument multiple times.
So it's like,
many,
welcome
many
to
times.
1968, dude.
I've always felt that it was a cop-out, because Dan is going to express the real reason why progressives hate the charter schools and private schools and follow the money voucher system so much.
You have no oversight of public dollars. Public.
I'm sorry. This
like you
is,
do now?
He's gonna get to it, but this is also a good reason.
Of public dollars, public tax dollars that are going to a private entity. You have no oversight. You have no board. No nothing. You also have a overall draining of the public education system, because every time that you take public dollars and cede them off to somewhere else, you still have the public facilities and staff that you have to maintain.
Boo-hoo. So money goes elsewhere where the parents actually want it to go, which, by the way, it's their money. And this system, which has been flailing for so many years, he's saying it's going to dry up and blow away. He's right. If it's a bad system, it needs to be allowed to die.
Well, there's he that's of a point, like, structurally. Like, if they have a five-year contract with all these teachers, they need to renegotiate that to reflect.
They need to stop doing four-year contracts and go back to one-year contracts.
Well,
or no contracts.
Not yet, because this isn't a real thing, so they don't need to. But I'm saying they would have to massively renegotiate how they look at their budget, how they look at their contracts, how they look at, you know, even maintenance funds and maintenance upkeeps to be able to accommodate a certain fluctuation. And probably a lowering of their, you know, student population.
And maybe run their business like they're actually trying to do good, do well for the customers. Employers, slash employers. Back to Dan.
That you have to maintain. And that starts to wither and dry up. It's almost like a preconceived notion. If we can send enough people out, and this, I'm not being sarcastic, I talk to people daily in the legislature. They want to drain every resource out of public education to make it collapse. They say constantly, the system's broken and it's no good. And they keep trying to figure out ways to prove their point by starving it.
Now, I'm sure that there are individuals out there who just want to make it, they want it to go away out of spite. I'm sure those people exist, but I don't, but I think
have
most of the, I think most of the people he's referring to are just what he said. They believe that it's broken. The system cannot be fixed. The current system cannot be fixed. The only solution is to allow competition to spring up.
To starve it.
And it will starve. Because the better competition will be out there and the parents will send their kids elsewhere.
Well, it only really... how different is that from people in the legislature who believe the only school system's fine and what needs to be done is just more money thrown at it. They need to be funded to do what they want to do. So, oh wow, he's encountered somebody who really believes something very different from him. Whatever will we do for him?
So I was going to talk about right to work. It looks like we will be getting that this year, as well as concealed carry, which I've never been able to wrap my mind around why New Hampshire has a concealed carry law when you don't need a permit to carry open carry, but you do need to conceal carry. So maybe if someone knows why that is, if someone can explain why that it was a law, why that was a law, because it's probably not going to be this year, it's probably going away.
Well, I guess it will be just like Vermont. The expectation I can imagine is that if you're a police or you're just a regular anybody and you see somebody and you can't openly see that they have a gun on them, then it's safe to assume that they're not armed. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I mean, the way I see it, there are enough people out there, and it's not a whole lot in New Hampshire, but there are enough of them that they don't want to see your gun because it, you know, they're scares them a little bit. So I want to carry concealed around them, so just because I want to be a considerate neighbor. I don't want to scare my neighbors every time I walk into the to the store with a revolver slashed to my hip.
No, that totally makes sense, and I pretty much, myself, I would rather people conceal carry because every person I've encountered who open carries, who makes a big deal about it enough for me to remember that they open carried, is kind of a brat about it. And they're, you know, holding it in their arms and dropping it on the ground and just being an idiot. So I would rather, my preference would be conceal carry because I have gotten pretty far in this life trusting that people are not being paranoid
We did get there is a chat question here considering about what I do think about right to work. And I know where the chatter stands on this. First of all, if this is a Republican thing, there are only a little over 9% of New Hampshire employees who are unionized. And, of course, most of those are government. So there's like 3.5% that are actually privatized. So this is one of those arguments that, you know, whatever. I do favor right to work. And when I say that, I favor any individual being able to opt out of forced unionization, having to pay union dues.
So it says in here from the union leader, right to work legislation would prohibit labor unions from collecting fees from workers who benefit from the agreements that are negotiated but don't join the union. So you would have to opt in. Well, it would go either way. They would either set it up that you have to opt in to join the union and have your fees collected, or probably, I think they talked about this in California, you would have to opt out and say, I do not want to join the union. Stop taking my money.
I think it would depend
on how it's going to be administered.
This is really, and hasn't been really written down in any context yet. But yeah, I would say that it would allow current union members to opt out, to get out of the union and stop paying dues, and new members the ability to not even join the union in the first place. Because what it really boils down to, unions, they had their time. There was a time when their, you know, the institutions of the time were really taking their employees for a ride. But we don't live in those times anymore.
I don't even know about that. I think unions in the 1880s and so were doing the work that the populace and the government wouldn't want to do in the 1830s and 40s.
But again,
that's even more of a speculation than your.
Now, I will say this: here I am. I support right to work, but I also support unions. So I'm not anti-union. I'm not a union buster. I just support the idea that I don't have to join one if I don't want to. Now, here there are plenty of reasons why you wouldn't want to be a part of a union. The biggest one that I can see is that spending your money, your dues, on things that you don't support. The biggest
things
one
that are going to bankrupt your job.
Well, and that you can blame the all the jobs going to China on that one.
Well, that's a part of it.
Labor unions drove jobs right out of this country, and it wasn't just NAFTA. It helped, but labor unions, you did your share.
Of gasoline.
But when they spend my, because I was in one situation. I worked for the post office.
Mm-hmm.
They were always trying to get me to join the union, and I didn't want any part of it. But yeah, when you have a union who is supporting a political candidate that you don't support, and yet they're getting your money and they're sending your money to support that candidate,
yeah.
Well, there's a problem.
Well, they know better than you.
And especially when you talk about government unions, I mean, just think about that. Think of all the taxpayer money that went to unions, or that went to the government employee that went to the unions to support a political candidate.
Yeah,
on both sides of the aisle, by the way, probably.
Yeah, that's why I don't think that government unions should be allowed to form. I think it's a horrible idea that was presented in the 60s. I think Jerry Brown in the 70s, or maybe in the 70s, he was the one that allowed government employees to unionize. My experience with unions was reading an internet forum board in the early 2000s of pizza delivery people, and they discussed unionizing. There were a couple posters on there who were like, we need to unionize because our job is horrible and nobody else works hard. And it was pretty much all just drivers. It was, if you were just taking the calls and all that, like, I shouldn't have been in the group,
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't a driver. I was even worse. I was an assistant manager. So everybody hated me. You know, they didn't, it's kind of a nightmare. Like, it would have destroyed fast food or the pizza delivery industry faster than it's going right now. And fast food industry as itself is going down the drain.
Well, my big question on this new legislation is,
hopefully,
is how does it work? Does it allow you to get out of the union, or does it, you have to join the union if you're, you know, if the union is present, but you don't have to pay dues. And the big one, of course, is will this allow government unions to opt out? Because, like I said, if it's just private unions, well, that's only 3% of the workforce, and they're probably not a problem anyways. The big problem is that, you know,
well, a unionized workforce,
that's 6% of government.
A unionized workforce in a private industry does have effects on other industries that it encounters.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, there's that whole big picture that we don't know.
And you know, and one of the bigger arguments is
really,
that
we don't know anything about.
One of the bigger arguments is that this is going to help the New Hampshire Advantage and actually entice big business, big companies to come to New Hampshire, the ones that are all going down south to North Carolina and whatnot. And everyone's like, yeah, that's not really going to happen. You know, it's that's the reason they're not coming here is because the energy bill and the fact that there are not enough workers to work these facilities, which, by the way, I think is a big one. Energy, I don't know. I'm still looking into that one. But no, this just let this happen. You know, let it go into effect for 2-3 years, 4 years before, you know, next time it comes around and they try to repeal this and see what happens. I mean, I think it's a good experiment. I'm really curious to see how many unionized government workers drop out. I know that I've heard from some teachers who wish they could opt out.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that out in California on the radio.
So I know that it's a real thing. We'll be staying on touch. Stay in touch.
Well, when
they
do actually present an actual bill, then yeah, there will be something to talk about. Because right now, everything in the union leader was just Sununu said this. Here's what Democrats hate about him. Okay, great.
Well, it's only January. There's still many more months to.
Right, it's a made up article presented for. Sorry, not sorry, but Democrats to complain about what the Republican said, sort of, that he might do in a hypothetical.
If you don't,
it's all an example of how letting other people frame the debate for you results in you losing.
No, this is
way, there's
this,
nothing this, going this, on right now. There's no factual thing that happened.
No, this is when you write your legislators right now. You go knock on their doors, you call them on the phone, you write them a letter saying, I saw this in the union leader. I think that you should vote this way. Let me tell you why. So no,
there's nothing to vote on yet.
This is to get in the frame of mind. This is to actually.
There we go.
All right. Well, you're so hard on these guys. I don't know why you hate government so much, Shauna. Guys, thanks so much for watching. Go check all of those previous videos at our website, citizenkane.org. Feel free to call that number anytime during the week. I won't necessarily pick up, but you can leave a message if you would like. Email me. The email address is show@citizenkane.org. I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. And were there anything else I needed to drop? Nope. That we'll definitely be talking about that deliberative session coming up in February 11th. So there's a couple of episodes in between there. Guys at home, thank you so much for watching, listening, however you're getting it. We will see you again next week at the same time. Good night.
Jesus Christ.